Today is the 50th anniversary of the Tibetan uprising that forced the Dalai Lama, the Tibetan spiritual leader, into exile.
Things are still going on very badly inside Tibet. That, unfortunately, after 50 years, still basically the same way. And some cases even worse.
It's the Dalai Lama speaking to the BBC, and some of the unrest that we saw 50 years ago, there were hints of, some very brutal hints of, as China was preparing for the Olympics. There were monk-led protests and some deadly anti-China riots in the Tibetan capital of Lhasa. Joining us to talk about the significance of the 50th anniversary and how it is a legacy both for Chinese rule and also for the Dalai Lama's attempt to lead the country into some form of independence is Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times. He joins us by phone. Nicholas, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
What are your thoughts this 50th anniversary? Because it's a very troubled legacy on both sides, it seems to me.
I think it's incredibly depressing that there really have been times in the past few decades when it looked like there might be an attempt to resolve this. But these days, both sides are farther apart. After the Dalai Lama dies, I think it'll be rather more difficult ever to resolve this. And I think each side is making some real miscalculations that will make it that will just increase the problems within Tibet for the Tibetan people.
What are the pro-independence groups' miscalculations, in your view, including the Dalai Lama's?
I think that their problem, in my view, I mean, I have enormous sympathy for what they're going through, but that they've miscalculated where their constituency is. And the Dalai Lama has won enormous international legitimacy, and rightfully so, but at the expense of any legitimacy within China and among the Chinese people. And the fact is that the constituency that really matters to a lot of the Tibetan people within Tibet are those Chinese. And I don't think he's done as good a job reaching out to within China to the ordinary population and also to the leaders, and missed a few opportunities earlier on. In recent years, I think he's tried harder to overcome that. But at the end of the day, what is desperately needed is some kind of an agreement between the Dalai Lama and the Chinese government that would give more autonomy to Tibetans, more religious freedom, and would most importantly check the flow of the Chinese population, the Han Chinese population, into Tibet. And conversely, what the Chinese have catastrophically miscalculated is that they think that it's going to be easier to deal with these issues when the Dalai Lama dies. And I know, in contrast, he's been a huge restraining force on Tibetans. You talk to young Tibetans, and the main thing between them and a much more violent approach is their enormous faith in the Dalai Lama.
Well, when it comes to the question of the Dalai Lama, there are many different spiritual leaders that come out of Tibet, and some of them disagree with the Dalai Lama on various points of, you know, how this debate over sovereignty should be negotiated. Is there truly, from the U.S. perspective and the Chinese perspective, only a discourse with the Dalai Lama, or are there other people involved that represent the interests of Tibet?
He's the only one who has broad legitimacy among the Tibetan people. I mean, there are other factions and other groups, but he is genuinely revered by the entire Tibetan population. And I think he's the only one who could deliver the kind of concessions that would be necessary. So there are other leaders. I mean, one of the other constraints is that the number two spiritual leader is the Panchen Lama, and China has effectively kidnapped the Panchen
right.
Lama because it was somebody that they didn't like. And so they now have a fake Panchen Lama whom they are raising, and the real one vanished as a small child.
Well, this constituency inside China seems to be the key, and you raise a great point, that the Dalai Lama can have as many lunches as he wants with Brad Pitt and Richard Gere and Steven Spielberg and all the celebrities in the world, but unless you have a foothold in the sort of mentality of the Chinese people, forget about it. And I'm wondering, as the recession takes hold in China, is that even going to be more difficult to get the attention of people in China as the agenda shifts to things like stimulus packages and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it is. And the unrest a year ago was a real milestone in that, in causing resentment among the Chinese population. Before that, people often didn't have really strong views, but these film clips of Han Chinese being attacked by Tibetans within Tibet just aroused enormous anger. And if you ask Chinese almost anywhere around the country, they'll say, you know, we spent millions and millions of yuan trying to develop Tibet. We've dramatically improved the quality of life there. And then they come and attack civilians, tourists walking around Lhasa. And, I mean, that is a very widely held perspective. And a lot of ordinary Chinese think that the Chinese government has been too soft on Tibetans, while, you know, in fact, talk to any Tibetan and they tell you that the absolute opposite, that China may have done some development, but that's only to steal Tibetan resources. The government has been enormously repressive. And, you know, the two sides are just farther apart than ever.
Well, as you've written many times in the past, there's a tendency always to think that, you know, China might be opening at a time like this where there's a new administration, but one need only look to Hillary Clinton's recent trip to Asia. Tibetan certainly is not on the top of the U.S. agenda. Nick Kristof, as we look back over 50 years, the trends are not good. Thanks for helping us with that.
My pleasure.
Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times talking about the 50th anniversary of Tibet.